Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and on today's show, Sherry is not with us today, and I'm excited to have with us Sister Phil Deanna. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. It's great to have you on the air today.
Thank you. It's great to be on the air today.
Wonderful. And I understand we'll be talking about the history of the Zen Center.
Yes, that's what the topic is. It's a pretty exciting topic, actually.
Great. Before we jump into that, let me take care of a couple of housekeeping details here. If you'd like to reach us by email when we're not on the air, you can send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org. So if you have a question about the show, something you'd like Sherry to address when she's on the air live, please send it to openair@livingcompassion.org. Also, archives of all of the shows are available right here at the same website, worldtalkradio.com. And I'm going to give a little update on schedule of events. On June 25th, that's a Saturday, Living Compassion invites you, your family, and friends to be guests at a concert that we're hosting in San Jose with musical artists Trish and Richard Brooksfort Colligan. And Trish has a CD called Splash that features a song that was inspired by Sherry's teaching and several other songs that Sherry's really excited about, and we'd love to have you join us for this concert. If you'd like to hear their music, you can go on to the Living Compassion website, which is livingcompassion.org, and there's a link to some of their music there. And if you are coming, we'd love to know. Again, that's Saturday, June 25th from 3 to 5 p.m., and if you're planning to come, we'd love to hear from you. So if you could RSVP to us by email, that would be really great. Our email address is information@livingcompassion.org. And now, back to our topic. Phil, can you give us a little background about the Zen Center and where it started and where it went and all of that?
So from the very beginning, the really early, early days, I believe at least when I came on the scene was about, I guess, 1982, and I think Sherry had just recently come out of the monastery she trained at in somewhere around Yosemite. She was giving what at that point we called workshops in the Bay Area. She had this little VW Volkswagen van, and she would travel around and give these little evenings of basically a discussion group in different people's homes that that she knew.
Yes.
So it was like we'd have what we'd call, I think she might have called it meditation, but it was like we sat for maybe 3 or 4 minutes, and that was it. And it wasn't called Zen. We didn't, you know that's what it was. And it was mostly personal growth kind of things. And
I see.
And so that's kind of, you know, the first. And she did the workshops, the very same workshop she did now.
Yes.
Which is the Not What But How, the very beginning workshop.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, those of us that were doing those in those discussion groups took that kind of workshop, and as time went by and there were enough people, instead of her going from house to house, you know, or having it in these people's homes in the evening, it was like all of a sudden it was, let's have a center.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it was going to be called a Zen Center. So now it got to be a little more Zen. So actually we did find a place in Mountain View that was 100 years old.
100 years old?
100 years old. It looked like it was about to fall apart.
Wow.
Yeah. And the grass was as taller than I am. And I'm not kidding. And it would be growing up the chimney and into the windows and the inside of the house and stuff like that.
Inside
and we actually got up enough money just from the people that were around, though, and we bought that thing.
Yes.
And we actually had to clean it out with hose and shovels and picks.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Cleaning out a home with hose and shovels.
Yeah, there was a woman that lived there with about 10 cats and some parakeets or something.
Yes.
So, yeah, we actually had to cut out walls, and we did all kinds of things, but we made it look really nice, and it became actually a very official Zen center. And, you know, it's always the same. And it's the same up to today, too. Every time that Jerry kind of innovates something, makes something new, makes some kind of changes, you know, more people come and a few drop away.
Yes.
And that happened then, too.
Yes.
It grew, and some of the old guard, you know, fell away because it wasn't quite what they had in mind.
Yes.
But now we had an official Zen center.
So you started out with Sherry in her van traveling around doing workshops in people's homes.
That's right.
They were more personal growth oriented at that point.
Yes.
And doing a workshop that you called Not What, But How.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say a little bit more about what that workshop is?
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the most important things about our practice, not what. It's not what, it's how. And that workshop, it's now, we still do it by itself, but it's also part of the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat and some of the others, because it's the basic, the five processes of our practice.
Yeah.
And it's a two-day, you know, a whole weekend workshop. And
yes.
There was this part one, it was called, which is the official Not What But How. And then there'd be a part two. And in those days, all we then would do a part three, part four, part five. Now we have fancy names for them, but
yes.
They're all versions of the same thing, the Not What But How, basically.
Yes.
Extensions of that.
And you mentioned the five processes.
The five processes, which is the, belief systems are... what we believe are talking voices in our head and what they talk about, and then aspects of ourselves,
yes.
Different parts of ourselves, and what the processes are is how to work with those. So there's a way to work with the belief systems, a way to work with the subpersonalities or the aspects of ourselves,
yes.
You know, a way to work with projections, how the different aspects of ourselves project from what they believe.
And right, so that would be the third process.
That's the third process. And then
projection.
The fourth one would be the way to disidentify from all that going on and to move into center, which would be the fifth process.
Yes.
So that, the core of our practice, was in the very beginning and is till now. So some things never change. You know,
yes.
As some of the way, the ways of the what might be different, but how we practice has always been the same.
I see. So no matter what the content is that we're looking at, whether it's our job or relationship or family or whatever, what we're interested in is the process by which we approach each of those.
That's right, with conscious compassion or awareness, as
yes.
The title of the show indicates.
And yes.
You know what was really fun? We sat and we became a regular Zen center there at that place on Dana Street in Mountain View. And the interesting thing is then we would actually, when we always did wonderful, nice, charitable things such as, you know, we're doing now, service things, but we were a very small organization, and so they were somewhat smaller than what we're doing now. We had shoes for kids,
uh-huh.
Kind of walk, run, jog, where we collect money, and we gave it to a place in East Palo Alto, the Ecumenical Hunger Project, and bought shoes for children that didn't have shoes.
Wonderful.
We did a Bikes for Tykes.
Bikes for Tykes.
Yeah, we
great.
Repaired all these bikes and gave it to the same place for, I think, for Christmas, and we did
that's fun.
Tons of garage sales. That's how we supported ourselves, by yard sales.
Yes.
And then, you know, and it's just been branching out, expanding from there.
Yes. And that was back in, what, the mid-80s?
Those were the early 80s, yeah.
Early 80s that you bought the place in Mountain View.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was as we were sitting there. I know, I being a, you know, part of the Sisters of Notre Dame, I have access to this beautiful, most gorgeous place in Carmel.
Yes.
And so I brought the group, Sherry and the group, here for a weekend retreat.
Yes.
And it was such a wonderful experience, but the place was a bit run down at that point, and Sherry thought, oh, what if we came, you know, anytime the sisters would let us and help them maintain the place.
Yeah.
And that sounded like a really good idea, and yet that was like twice a year. And so then it was like, gosh, we need a place of our own that we could go on retreats.
Yes.
And that's what started our search for what at that point we called our retreat center. So
retreat center. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So around, must have been 84, 5, somewhere in there, we started looking for property. And, of course, we looked close to the Bay Area, but we couldn't find anything that we could actually buy.
Yeah.
It was way too expensive even in those days and only small amounts
right.
of property. And until our search finally led up to around Calaveras County and to the place where we found, where we have now.
Yes, which is in Murphy's.
Which is in Murphy's, yeah, where the monastery is. So Sherry said, well, if we buy that, will anybody go there? The four of us raised our hands.
Wow. Jerry said, if we buy this property, who's going to go there?
Yeah, because we had to have somebody to begin with this big endeavor, this project that we had in mind, you know.
Yeah. So and you raised your hand.
I raised my hand.
Along with three other people.
Along with three other people. And so that, I think we must have bought the property in 86.
86.
Somewhere around there. And started, well, our first week, we'd go camping on it. It might have been 85, I'm not sure, but we must have camped for a year, but building outhouses and all doing some of the groundwork, building the first hermitage, and eventually, with a whole gang of people, putting up the first army tent, which was a meditation kitchen area. All in one.
I see. In the kitchen.
Kitchen, dining, meditation.
I see. Cooking dinner, meditation.
Right.
Everything happened in the kitchen tent.
32-foot by 16-foot army tent.
32-by-16-foot army tent. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was aptly called a med tent, M-E-D.
M-E-D.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
Yes.
So,
and for people who are not familiar with what a hermitage is,
oh, yeah.
Did
so it was a little card, plywood, well, we call them hermitages. Some people would call them shacks, but we wouldn't call them that.
Yeah.
And so the first one actually had a real roof. It's the Garden Hermitage now. That's the first one we built.
I see.
But then we didn't have power tools or anything, so it was like we used hand tools, so we got the idea, Sherry got the idea for a hermitage kit.
Ooh, hermitage kit.
Yeah, and that meant that everything was the same, so the least amount of cutting that we'd have to do. So the hermitage was built out of plywood with a tin roof, but it was 16 by 8. So you took, you know, 4 sheets of plywood, so it was...
Yes.
8 feet wide and 16 feet long.
Yeah, 16 foot by 8 foot.
Yeah, and so, and then that was a lot less cutting. And it was, you know, because it's hard to cut plywood with a handsaw.
Yes, yeah.
And so the first year, though, yeah, so it must have been 85 we bought it, because the first year we'd go up there, and we built 3 of these, but we didn't finish them. We just, and this was all by... recycled wood, by the way, because we had torn down this place and used that. You know, it was always, in the beginning, we had no money, zilch.
Yeah.
So it was, we had these structures wrapped in tar paper.
In tar paper.
In tar paper. And then we got really innovative, and we cut window holes in the tar paper and put plastic over it. Plastic.
Yes.
So that's what they were for, I think, the first year. We didn't actually live in them that way, but we'd come up, you know, camping in them that way.
Yes. Fabulous. So they're like small homes.
Yeah, little tiny homes. Now, they had no electricity or running water.
Electricity or running water.
No, and some of them were heated by a tin stove.
Heated by a tin stove.
Tin stove, yeah. You know, yeah. That's it.
Is it tin stove? Is that a wood?
Wood burning. If anybody's been up there, they know what they are. If they don't, it's just a very thin wood stove made out of tin.
Uh-huh.
And so
wonderful.
That's how we kept warm in the winter.
Yes.
And then eventually, as we moved up there, I think I moved up there in 87, we put plywood around the... made walls. We actually made walls.
Oh, made walls.
So we had real walls.
Yes, instead of the tar paper.
Yeah. And that's how they stand now. Most of them, the original ones that people will notice, are long and thin.
Yes. Yes. 16 foot by 8 foot.
That's right. Well, actually, we spent a whole summer cutting off one side of each of those because we had to make them... We decided to make them comply with the actual footage for an out house, out
yes.
room. So they're now 14 feet by 8 feet. But by then, of course, we had the proper tools to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, like electric saws. And
you're right.
Yes.
Because that was really amazing.
Wonderful. So you went up there in 87 to live.
Yeah. And that's when it actually started, because there were four of us at that point, and living there in a monastic environment as best we could, not knowing what it was.
Yes.
And through Sherry's guidance, it's evolved to what it is today.
Yes.
Eventually we put up another tent, and that was the meditation hall. So now we had another... army tent. So we had our meditation hall separate from our kitchen and dining room now.
I see.
So that was our first expansion.
I see. From one tent to two tents.
Exactly.
100% growth.
Yeah, exactly. And they were right where the building that's up there today is.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Phil, we are near the end of our first segment here.
Oh, went by fast.
Went by fast. Yeah. A lot of history there. Very interesting. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness and our conversation with Sister Phyllis Deanna on the history of the Zen Center. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and today we're excited to have with us Sister Phyllis Deanna, who's been talking with us about the history of the Zen Center. Thank you for being here today, Phil.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great. Phil, I remembered a couple items on the calendar that I wanted to mention and forgot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
On July 1st to 8th, there'll be a There Is Nothing Wrong With You for Graduates Retreat at the Monastery with Sherry Huber. This is a week-long workshop for people who have done the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat that you talked about earlier, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
And on Saturday, August 20th, Sherry will be leading a workshop in San Francisco on radical self-acceptance. and you can get information about how to sign up for that, as well as the retreat, on the Living Compassion website. It's livingcompassion.org, and we'd love for you to check that out and take a look and sign up if you're interested. Again, if you have email questions, you can send them to openair@livingcompassion.org if you want to get in touch with us when we're not on the air. Archives are available right here at worldtalkradio.com from our show page. And if you'd like to give us a call today, you're welcome to join our conversation. The phone number is toll-free. It's 877-514-7300, and we'd love to hear from you today. Phil, when we left off, you were talking about the monastery and the first hermitages and then the first tents there.
Yeah, that's the fun part. You know, some people are always asking, though, and I think Sherry wanted me to mention the thing about how come you can be a sister and then spend that time at the monastery. Because I've been a sister now for, let me think, I think it's like 43 years.
43 years.
Something like that, 42, around
there. I'd want to give you a round of applause there for that. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a long time. And I've been doing this practice, you know, like I said, I think it was since 1982, which is about, 23 years, something like that. And I spent 10 of those years at the monastery.
Yes.
And it was like, you know, when I raised my hand, I had no idea that you know, if I'd be able to go. I was, at that point, I had been a primary school teacher and a Montessori school teacher, and I actually was a Montessori school teacher in East Palo Alto at that point.
Uh-huh.
And so it, what I, you know, so I wrote my, this as a proposal down to my group, and they said, oh, yeah, you could, you know, go for a year. So, I'd ask, can I go up there for a year and help get this established?
Yes.
And then ever after that, it was like each year when our, the thing would come out as to what you're going to do, I would just put, I'm going to continue doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that lasted for 10 years before they finally decided that it might be a good idea for me to come back down to the Bay Area and do something else.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that I'm always very grateful that for the sisters. And I think the reason we wanted to bring that up is because right now, you know, we're in another change, and in the sense of moving into Living Compassion,
yes,
as our organizational structure. And again, it's that same thing that many people are going to come on board and have come on board, and some people will just scratch their head and say, what are they doing now? You know, and walk off in a different direction. But
yes,
it's part of this, you know, this Living Compassion has been partnering with the sisters, and since that's one way how it got started.
Yes.
And just to remember, you know, that from the very beginning, in a sense, we were partnering with the sisters, because just by me being a part of this whole group has been a partnering with the sisters.
Yes.
And, you know, we've done Carmel all this time.
Yes.
And many other things, actually, kind of in partnership with the sisters. So that's been a very rich part of our relationship. And you know, we're really, in Living Compassion, hoping to branch out and partner with all kinds of other folks as we go,
yeah,
into that.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though what we're talking about in the history is how we started small, it's always that same focus on conscious compassion awareness, is even, you know, in the little tent,
yeah,
that we started out. You know, the other fun thing that people always wanting to know is how, you know, we had this little tent and we had a camp stove and we had these little hermitages and we would hold retreats for as many as 25 people.
Yes.
And everything we've ever done, and I would say including today's things that we do, have been a miracle.
Yes.
And we've always done them. And it's
yes.
almost like we didn't know better.
Yes.
So we just did.
You didn't know it was not possible.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so we just did it. So, you know, I was the first cook, and I cooked for these people on a two-burner propane camp stove
yes.
with jugs of water that we had to actually fetch from the neighbor in the beginning. We didn't have a well.
Yes.
And it's just one of those remarkable things, and it all worked. The food was a little bit simpler. It had to be with just two burners, so we had two pot meals.
Yes.
But it was always very good.
Great.
And it was just, it's just kind of a miracle thing.
Wonderful.
The next thing we did was we moved our meditation hall down to what's now, I guess, think that we call it the meditation hut.
Yes.
That was at one point a meditation grove when we just had platforms and we were there trying not to swat mosquitoes as we meditated, letting them eat us for dinner.
Yes.
And pretty soon we learned to build, because none of us were builders, and we actually learned to build as we went.
Yes.
We built a little hut around these platforms. We made a big platform and then built a enclosure around it. And then we were able to take down one tent, which was actually falling down and it's on its last legs.
Yes.
Move what was the meditation tent down to where we have hermitages now, but the kitchen grove. See, people who have been there all along will remember these spots.
Yes.
So we had the kitchen tent move. We actually took it down and moved it. I mean, everything we did was impossible. And we did it. And I think it's still that way. Some of these things seem impossible, but we do them.
Yes.
And so we moved our kitchen, which was plumbed. We used to call it funky plumbing, but it was plumbed. And that means with pipes, you know, to...
Yes.
By then we had a well.
Yes.
And a generator. Eventually we put in solar panels. And eventually, each hermitage had a light bulb with a solar panel. The solar panel came later. The light bulb was hooked to two batteries, which we had to individually, each person was responsible for their own every 7 days or so, lug these batteries up to a charger and charge them and then lug them back to their hermitage. So a solar panel was like a godsend.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, so these are some of the walking in the snow kind of stories.
Yes. And, Phil, we have a caller on the line.
Oh, great.
Who'd like to join our conversation. I'd like to welcome Cameron. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber and today, Sister Phyllis Deanna.
Hello,
hi, Cameron.
Phil. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hello, Cameron.
Hi.
I understand you have some information to share about the Zen Center in the early days, Cameron.
Well, it's interesting because I came on the scene about the time that kitchen tent was moved. I remember that day where we took the tent down from where the building exists now, and I think that was a one day thing. And then the next day, we put it up down there where the new little hermitage village is, and that was quite a project.
That was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You had to be there to appreciate it.
Yes. And then the building came a little bit later, is that right?
Yeah, and Cameron remembers this part, too. That was one of the reasons we moved that tent down, wasn't it, Cameron, to clear that area?
I think it may have been. Yeah, so I was not in on the reasons for things at that point. But
yeah, we were trying to get that area cleared so we could start the. I remember using the little surveyor equipment and trying to, you know, figure out where we were going to put the building. We had already worked with Chris Larson, our architect, to create the building, so we did that. It was all on paper.
Yes.
And so then it was to actually clear that spot, and that was the big reason for moving that kitchen tent.
Yes.
And then, Cameron, you were there for when we started digging the trenches, right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to let everybody know that basically what, there were two guys and three girls was the kind of the core group. Now, the Sangha would come in and help us periodically.
Yes.
We dug those trenches. One person drove the tractor and actually scraped out some of it, but it was the part where the bedroom, the dorm, and the bathrooms are solid rock.
Uh-huh.
And so we would, the other two of us, I know I was one of them, I think Cameron, you were the other one, would get in there with our little picks and shovels and, what do you call that thing, that big bar?
Crowbar.
Yeah, no, it was a big digging bar.
I see.
It was too heavy to lift, and we chopped out those trenches.
Wow.
Yep.
Sounds like a lot
when
of work.
When the tractor wasn't able to dig, the humans would do it.
Yeah. The tractor couldn't do it, so the humans had to dig out the rock. Yep.
Usually it's the other way around, isn't it?
I know.
I guess our tractor was too little.
Yeah.
But the funny part was that on our first inspection, all we heard was that the trenches had to be absolutely clean. There couldn't be any dirt. Now, these were dirt trenches. But they had to be clean. And we didn't know what that meant, and we had never been inspected. So, Cameron, you tell them this part.
Well, we actually took the shop vac and vacuumed out the trenches for the first inspection. You have never seen the most gorgeous trenches as
Goodness
those. And the inspector was shocked.
But it was funny because Cameron had on a little apron and she was the one vacuuming.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to be a little funny about it.
Yeah, so it was like she was, we did vacuum them, and those rocks were spotless.
You could have eaten dinner out of there.
Yeah, no kidding. The inspector was amazed. He said that was the cleanest trenches he'd ever seen. So along the way, we learned how to put the crowbar, rebar in.
Uh-huh. Rebar in the trenches before we put the concrete.
Put the concrete. So we built that from the ground up.
Yes. Yes.
And it was a labor of love.
Yes.
Every time any ego would get involved, you know, Sherry would say, I don't want any egos building this.
Uh-huh.
And so it was, you know, it was our working meditation, it was our practice, and it was truly, I know for me, and I think probably for all of us, a labor of love to build that building.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. It's great to hear about all the history. It's a lot of fun. For people who have been to the monastery and for people who will be
exactly
going to the monastery. Mm-hmm. Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Today we have Sister Phyllis Vienna, who's telling us about the history of the Zen Center, along with Cameron, and we'll be taking a break here, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation with Sister Phyllis Vienna on the history of the Zen Center. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. ¶¶ Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. And today I'm excited because we have with us Sister Phyllis Deanna, who has been involved with the Zen Center since the very beginning, in 82. And this is our last segment of today's show. And we also have Cameron joining us today also, who was there to help build the monastery originally in Murphy's, California. And given our limited time left, I'm hoping that, Cameron, you could tell us a little bit about building the monastery. And then from Phil, I'd love to hear about Assisi and Africa and the new Palo Alto location.
Good.
Great. Cameron.
Yes, Michael.
Tell us more about building the monastery building.
Well, as Phil said, the building the monastery was our working meditation for many, many years, day in and day out, regardless of the weather.
Yes.
And we were a group of folks who really didn't have experience or skills prior to doing it. And so we learned by doing, and it's just, as Phil says, it's kind of a miracle. When you look at that building, it's just so beautiful.
Yes.
And, you know, the practice was just going beyond one's own limits. You know, there would be a work note that said, "Today your job is this," and usually it was something that you knew you couldn't do. And we just learned and we just did it, and in the process, just had the opportunity to experience that the concept of our own limitations is really just something that's a belief, you know, and in having the experience over and over again of being able to go beyond those limits, it's tremendously freeing.
Yes.
And after a number of those, you start to get it.
Yes.
All of our concepts of who we are really are made up.
That experience you have over and over of going beyond your limitations, you just have to start to wonder about them, huh?
Yeah, I'm starting to have a little bit of experience of phone breakup here. I'm not hearing so well, but...
I'll try to talk a little more clearly there.
Okay, Michael.
And I project you brought a lot of willingness to this work.
Yes. Some days there was a lot more than other days. some days there was just very little, especially when the weather was either icy cold or burning hot. But, that's another aspect of limitations that came into it, you know, the weather or the, you know, it's to this, it's to that, and then you just do it anyway.
Yes, yes. So often you would receive a work note with something that you had never done before.
Uh-huh.
And the belief would be, I cannot do this.
Uh-huh.
And through your experience, you would find that indeed you could do that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course there was a lot of, there were some people who had skills and they would share their skills. And so there was, some lots of help along the way, too.
Great. Yeah. Great. Cameron, any more little stories or anecdotes you'd like to share about this whole process?
Well, there are just tons, Michael.
yes.
It sounds like your time is running low in terms of the show, and there's quite a bit of history to go even beyond building the monastery, because we have expanded into Living Compassion into huge other areas that maybe you'd like to cover before the end of the show.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'd like to mention, and it starts back in the old days, but it's that whole thing of this constant changing of being in flux. So, you know, we bought the Zen Center on Dana Street, and we became very, you know, that became our place. And yet, after a few years of having the monastery, it occurred to Sherry that at some point, it took her a while to get to it, that we needed to sell the place on Dana Street. And that was really hard for folks. And but it was that same thing, you know. We sold it, and then we rented airy places around Mountain View, so we never stopped the Sangha. And again, more people would came. Some people fell away. And it's, you know, and then just recently we have done something even more different, you know, by renting the house on Waverly Street where we actually have residents.
This is now in Palo Alto?
In Palo Alto, yeah, where the Zen Center is now. We've actually renting a whole house again. This is our first house since the Dana Street house, even though we don't own this one.
Yes.
And so we have our Zen Center and also a, like I said, a place for three different residents, and that's the first. And that, actually, that's something from way back from the very beginning we'd always wished we had. And it took maybe 25 years, but now we have something that we had wished we had then. And then, you know, so even with the monastery, there was a time where, the you know, we had some pretty lean years in the sense that there was only two of us, actually. It was Cameron and myself who were there for 2 years.
Yes.
That tried to continue building the building and keep the garden from completely dying out and keep the retreats going.
Yes.
And that was this was another time where it was like, this is impossible, and yet we did it. We carried on with retreats and workshops. We actually carried on putting some parts of the building, well, actually quite a bit, didn't we, Cameron? And we did keep most of the garden from dying.
Yeah.
And it was that same thing. And Sherry came, you know, and said, I think we had a meeting of just a few of two of us and maybe a couple of some Sangha members, and said, all right, do we need to sell the monastery? And it was like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, I don't think so. You know, let's, she says, I don't want you two to be like, so to speak, saddled with it. And so, you know, it was up to us. If we wanted to leave at that point, then the monastery would be sold or at least put up or on the market. And if not, it wouldn't. And we decided to stay. And through those lean years is what, it's kind of like, reminds me of that thing, if when the seed dies, then comes the, you know, the beauty, because it was like, it seemed like it was just about to die, and out of that came the phoenix, you know, out of the resurrection, like, came this, because it was just shortly after that yes from that we made that it started a whole new growth. People started coming for long, extended periods of time, and until it is what it is today.
Yes, great. Thank you for that history, Phil.
Yeah, because just to, and that does lead into living compassion, because it's that same kind of movement, you know, that same kind of change, that same kind of flux. Now we're, something else is sprouting, is growing, you know, out of what we have already.
Yes, great. Cameron, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Cameron.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Cameron.
Bye.
Bill, we have just a couple minutes left here, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the genesis of the work in Africa, and I understand you had a trip to Assisi, too, a while ago.
Well, I had a trip a long while ago, yes, to Assisi. That was quite wonderful. And, you know, this whole the whole thing, and that was from the pure generosity of Sherry, and I, because she loves Assisi so much, and I think other people I know have gone since, and it's just, again, the work in Africa and this vision of creating a peace center in Assisi, you know, as well as your very own radio show, and as well as the monastery, the way we have it now, that there's nothing wrong with your work, is the fruit, you know, I think, of the labor of what we have been doing so far.
Yes.
And we're beginning to, I mean, the fruit now is, you know, what we need to all in our practice. It's not something new and different and separate from our practice.
Yes.
It's the continuation, the growth out of our practice and what we've had so far in our wonderful, beautiful, miraculous history.
Yes.
This is a continuation of that.
Yes.
And the work in Africa, it is one of the most inspiring things that anyone could hope for in a part of the country, a part of the world, a continent that is virtually ignored by the rest of the world. And
yes.
And the riches there with the people is just amazing. The wealth that we could what we could benefit from our work in Africa is probably way more than what we'll ever be able to give.
Yeah.
And yet it's that giving, that effort to give, that creates the opportunity for that beautiful wealth from the people in Africa that we can receive.
Yes.
And I just hope that all our Sangha members, you know, really come on board for this one. I know many, many, many of them are, and we don't want anyone not to. And eventually, this is the opportunity. This is the part of our practice where it can touch everyone in the world. Everyone can partner in this, in compassion, be partners in living compassion with us.
Yes.
Because everyone has the compassion. And it's
yes.
just to, it's like, it's a living compassion is a vehicle for us, at least that's how I experience it, for me to express the compassion, and in a way and in a time and with people that I really enjoy expressing it and being with.
Yes. A real opportunity to see that there's nothing wrong with us inside.
Yeah.
And from that place, from that generosity and compassion that comes up, it's a chance to see, oh, I can contribute. I can contribute to myself. I can contribute in the world.
Yeah.
You know.
There's no reason to be sad, no reason to feel overwhelmed, no reason to say, oh, my God, you know, there's what am I going to do? I mean,
yeah.
Here we are. We have a place where we can put our energies in a positive, loving, compassionate, growthful way.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What a great way to end it, Phil.
Yeah.
It's been my great pleasure today to have Sister Phyllis Diana on the phone with us, talking about the history of the Zen Center and of Living Compassion. It's just been really great.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. It has been wonderful.
Thank you, Phyllis.
All righty.
And we'll talk with you next week.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Okay.
All righty, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.